Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you. Always good to be with you. My name's Nelson. I'm one of the pastors here, and it's my privilege to have your attention for this teaching moment in our gathering. I invite you to take a deep breath as we get going. As Aaron mentioned earlier, if you are new this morning, for the past several weeks, we have been walking through a practice series called Living Connection. And the basic idea there is that from God's side, we can never be separated from that living connection. It's constant, it's ongoing. This is good news. But even so, there are times when from our side, the signal gets weaker. The bond isn't as strong as it once was. This series then has been an attempt to sit with questions like, what do we do when the wires get tangled? What does it look like to continue to heal our relationship to prayer? And how might we collaborate with the Spirit to recover and renew our sense of a living connection with God? So if you have been around for any of these Sundays or all of them, it's been rich, hasn't it, to learn about and to dig into these different prayer traditions. We've looked at the examine, at lament, we've looked at the Ignatian exercises, and considering trauma-informed practices. So big thanks to Erin for her work in setting up, lining up this series, outlining it, and inviting some guests also to lend their voices as well. So today, for the last sermon of the series, I'm very excited to say a little bit about what it means to pray with the Celts. Now I say a bit because, as with all of these themes and traditions, so much more could be said about each one. So a couple questions as we get going. Why am I personally excited about this theme? Thank you so much for asking. For one thing, I don't think I'm particularly good at praying either, Adria and everybody. So this theme is at least 37% self-serving. One root cause for my hesitance around prayer is that I'm prone to misunderstand the nature of God. In my head, I believe that God is always with me and for me, that this living connection is solid. Because the Spirit of Christ actually dwells in me. That's in my head pretty constantly. But that trusting posture seems to take a long time to actually work its way into my heart and into my body. Now, Celtic Christians placed a high value on following the way of Christ in the everyday. Getting in touch with that has been a key for me many times over the last couple of decades in getting better at prayer, getting in touch with this understanding of encountering God in the everyday. The Celts have a way of opening my attention and my awareness and expanding my definitions of the places God can be found. And I mean, we need help to be praying people, don't we? Get an amen or two out there? We need help. We need help to be praying people. So if you're like me at all, not great at praying, but want to get better, maybe you resonate with the idea of a living connection with God, but don't always know how to practice prayer in ways that make that feel real and authentic. Celtic forms of prayer just might reignite something in you. That's my hope and my prayer today. Another question, why am I the one talking about this? It's not because I'm Scottish. I have in fact fooled Scottish people before, not intentionally, but when visiting there, they've asked me, Ginger, I don't know what the thing is. Pretty good accent, I'm not gonna try it, but right now. I've been privileged to visit Iona twice. Okay, just one line, that's all you're getting. So Iona is a tiny island off the west coast of Scotland. It's an important place in terms of the history of Christianity. So having visited there twice, I feel a kinship with this stream of spirituality. A few years back, I developed and offered a retreat through Artisan called Praying with the Celts. And some of those resources are going to be available to you this week if you want to dig deeper into this tradition. I happen to have read a few books by John Philip Newell, who some of you probably have heard of. He's one of the world's leading, I think, experts on Celtic spirituality and theology. So I've got some experience, I've got some interest. That's all that qualifies me to be up here. Now, there's way too much to talk about, so let's get to it. I want to invite you to think of this preaching moment as a metaphorical pilgrimage. We're going to go on a little walk together. I'll function as a sort of guide. And if you've done any kind of walking tour before, you know that anytime there's a lot of ground to cover, it's a kindness to have at least some idea where you're going. So here's a quick overview. We're going to look at Celtic spirituality and history. That's bullet point one. Bullet point two is actually nine characteristics of Celtic spirituality. They're not all super long. None of them are super long. So we're going to get through them fairly quickly. And then we're going to end with a practice. So a little history, theology, some characteristics, and a practice. So there are a lot of ways to talk about the word spirituality. I don't know what comes to mind for you. It would be great to take a 5-minute break here and just actually circle what comes to mind when you think of spirituality. For our purposes this morning, I want to invite us to think of it simply as how we live out what we most profoundly believe. How we live out what we most profoundly believe. It's a word that contains our entire approach to life, what we think, what we do, how we do it, what and how we see. So when we talk about spiritual formation, I'm called the pastor of spiritual formation. In my mind, that just means life formation, because everything is spiritual, yeah? And as Celtic Christians well understood, spirituality would certainly include the why and the how of prayer. Now, one of the great discoveries of faith in many traditions is we don't ever make this spiritual journey alone. Not only do we have many traveling companions today, we're also aware that many have walked these paths before us. So we are connected to the great cloud of witnesses of Hebrews 11 who urge us to go farther on and further in. So while spirituality takes many different forms, what we're doing here in connecting briefly to the desert, Celtic, monastic, contemplative stream is to consider a way to express the way. Now, who were the Celts? Well, in the centuries before Christ, the northern neighbors of ancient Greece and Rome were known by the description Celtoi, meaning strangers or hidden ones. The word kilt means an act of concealing. Do you see where this is going? That's where we get the word kilt. The skirt of traditional Celtic dress, most often worn by male-identifying humans. I thought about wearing a kilt this morning for about 5 minutes and then thought better of it. I don't own one, so where in the world would I get one? So a southern flank of these people had come south of the Black Sea and settled in the part of present-day Turkey known in New Testament times as Galatia. And Celtic peoples and languages were also found in much of Europe, including Brittany, Gaul, and the British Isles. Well, then in the early medieval period, the Anglo-Saxons invaded, and that pushed the Celts to the western extremes, settling in Cornwall, Wales, Isle of Man, Cumbria, southwest Scotland, and the whole of Ireland. So from the earliest times, almost all of Britain and Ireland, culturally speaking, anyway, were Celtic. And the term Celtic covers a whole culture that included pagan and pre-Christian elements, as well as the so-called Christian Celtic, or the Celtic Christian Church. So the Celts as a people were rural, tribal, always on the move people. And they were distinct from the Romans, who identified with the dominant power of the cities. And as such, the Roman church didn't always know how to respond to the Celtic people. The Northumbria community. Anyone familiar with Northumbria as well? Anyone been there? One or two, maybe? Okay, a few of us. These are a community that are still kind of functioning in this Celtic way, and they're in continuity with early Celtic Christianity. Spoke of the Celtic Christians as being relational more than rational and more inspirational than institutional. Now, I don't want to overstress the binaries here, but I thought that's just worth a brief mention. Now, Ireland, unlike Britain and Gaul, was untouched by the Roman Empire. So it was from Ireland that Celtic spirituality had its roots, its passion, and its expansion. The primary missionary movement across Britain became a hinge in history as Christianity spread all over much of Europe. So Patrick goes to Ireland in 432, Columba in 560 from Ireland to Iona, Columbanus in 591 to France and Italy, and Aidan in 635 to Lindisfarne. Now, if you've done any traveling in these places, you know that the churches and these ruins and the crosses dot the landscape, right? And these monuments bear witness to this monastic mission. Okay, so let's talk about some characteristics of Celtic spirituality. Number one, monasticism. In the Celtic Christian world, every church was monastic. So when we talk about the Celtic church, it's synonymous with the monastery. That is, with people living in community. Their emphasis was less on gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, meaning to know, a faith that's mainly built on propositional presentation, like a knowing in the head. Instead, the Celts were centered on asceticism, meaning to live, which is relational, personal, and embodied. So this value of asceticism, as the Celts understood it, is like the come and see of John chapter 1, the invitation of Jesus to his followers. Come and see. Let's live this. It's living from our heart's deepest desire to be at home with Jesus and at peace with our truest self. John Philip Newell, who I mentioned earlier, said, "That which is deepest within us is not opposed to God." Whew. That which is deepest in us, truest in us, is not opposed to God. So getting in touch with that. It's asking the questions, who is it that you seek? And how then shall we live? That's why soul friends were encouraged. The Gaelic term, anam cara. And that included the one-on-one companioning of spiritual direction. The monastery, in other words, was a school, one where the seeking of God was the one thing necessary. Indeed, the ground of life itself, the teaching. It was teaching what we live by living what we teach. Number two, sacramental outlook. This is really just a celebration of ordinariness and an earthed humanity. Celtic Christians believed nothing was secular because all is sacred. In other words, nothing is outside of God's love and grace. I love this image. Celtic wisdom says we need to take time to learn how to play the five-stringed harp, to experience the divine with all five senses. So what we hear and see and smell, taste and touch all speaks of God. It is living incarnationally, as the Apostle John wrote, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. So a sacramental outlook, because it sees God in everything, encourages a reverence for God's creation and an active stewarding of the world God made, as we were reminded in our Isaiah reading this morning. Thank you, Richard, for that. This earthy spirituality met people where they were. People didn't have to climb ecclesiastical walls or learn some kind of holy language to be met by God. They believed that the very presence of Christ infused daily life, even transformed it, so that any moment, any object, any task or work can become a thin place. Another image. Celtic image, thin place, describes physical places or metaphysical moments when heaven and earth come so close together in our perception that there's only the thinnest line of separation between them. So that's why they had prayers for getting up and lighting the fire and getting dressed and milking the cow and taking out the trash and making the stew. Prayers for every aspect of life. That's sacramental outlook. Third, contemplation and mission. So a commitment to mission, here understood as being sent or even simply being faithful to the task, meant connecting with people, building relationships, pursuing community both on the road and at home, exploring spirituality together, living in the story and living out the story. This was mission, in other words, that flowed out of the context of the monastery. And that enabled the Celts to put personhood ahead of productivity. They saw themselves more as human beings than human doings. They expressed the freedom to be, to embrace intentional uselessness, and to waste time with God. Thomas Merton describes this really well when he says, "The monk," we can just understand that as Christ follower, "is not defined by their task or their usefulness. In a certain sense, they are supposed to be useless because their mission is not to do this or that job, but to be a person of God." So good. So this rhythm of contemplation and mission, or we could more broadly substitute the word action here, is exemplified by the ebb and flow of the tides of Holy Island. Now, this is the place I want to go. Not been here, but this is where the Northumbria community is located. This is known as Lindisfarne or Holy Island off the northeast coast of England. And the Celtic saint I mentioned earlier, known as Aidan, coming from Iona in the year 635, specifically chose this island as the center for his mission. And he did so for a significant reason. And that is, it's a tidal island. It's closed off from the mainland for half the day. We'll say more about why that mattered to him in a moment, but let's come up for air just for a brief minute, and I want to show you a time-lapse video of the sea washing over the causeway that connects Lindisfarne to the mainland. Okay? So just a minute and a half here. Have a look. So cool. It's great when you read about a thing and then you look on YouTube for a video and the music doesn't suck. Like, it's really nice, right? It's sort of beautiful. Aidan chose the tidal island of Lindisfarne because it reminded him of Iona, but it also reminded him of the need for both the cell, this is a symbol of the contemplative life, and the coracle, which is a small wicker boat and a symbol of the active life. Cell and coracle. Being and doing, monastery fueling mission, and contemplation grounding our action. Another way to put it is seeking God in the heart so we can better serve God in the world. Yeah. So in the Living Connection resources document, which some of you have been in recent weeks, I've included three Celtic prayer liturgies and some prompts, ways to be with them in solitude if you'd like. And one of those is based on the prayer of Aidan. So you can read more about that and participate in that if you'd like. So this inner journey, the landscape of the heart, and the outer journey, the landscape of the land, both part of the same life, embracing and expressing availability to God and to others. So life was seen as pilgrimage, this mix of going and staying and moving on and doing and being and excitement and mundane. In the home and the marketplace, noticing God at work in the ordinariness of life as it is. 4, hospitality. Now, in Celtic hospitality, or Celtic understanding, hospitality is first and foremost a matter of the heart. It's welcoming God from our spiritual interior each day, and also welcoming others from that place too, because the person could be Christ. When the Celtic Saint Cuthbert went to his solitude on Innerfarn Island, he built a guest room for God. There's just an image of St. Cuthbert's chapel. And this was a way, simply, to tangibly live into the teaching of Jesus in Matthew 25. As much as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. And also Hebrews 13, which speaks of our entertaining angels unaware. Because who knows? Hospitality was seen in care for the poor. When Aidan served as bishop, King Oswald would give him many gifts, but he in turn shared them with those who needed them. So this is hospitality, is an all-embracing, all-inclusive welcome of people as people. They were committed to love of God, love of neighbor, and love of one another. Women were truly equal and were often valued leaders. Hild, Bridget, Emma, or Ebba. And you can pray with Bridget as well by checking out the resources document. Number five, creation affirming. For the Celts, this was both a deep love of nature and an awareness of the unity of creation. So Columbanus, a 6th century Irish missionary, said, if you wish to understand the Creator, first understand his creation. That's such a good prompt, hey? Celtic spirituality, it should be said, is not pantheism. It's not a worshiping of the stones, but an affirmation of the wonder of the one who made the stones. So this got played out in the quiet care of all living things and a special affinity with animals. The Celts had a strong sense of place. They knew the importance of land, of roots, of identity, and they spoke of these thin places as holy ground. We need to reclaim Celtic spirituality for ecological reasons, given the ever-present and pressing challenges of climate change and food shortages and pollution and traffic gridlock. That begins in part by having the humility and courage to name these hard realities in our praying, asking for God's wisdom, fresh imagination, and stamina in considering how we ought to respond. Number six, spiritual warfare. Perhaps coming from their Druidic pagan culture, they had a very real sense of the spiritual world. They understood spiritual warfare as an everyday reality. The sign of the cross, for example, was Trinity affirming and Christ exalting. For them, it was a saving sign of protection to keep away evil. And for the Celts, this wasn't superstition, but a statement of fact. It's the cross is where the power is. Liturgical prayer was seen as a confronting of the powers in the heart as well as in our place of mission, the cell and coracle, as we talked about earlier. Number seven, Trinitarian belief. So experiencing God as triune was huge for the Celts. For them, community began in the heart of God. The God who is love is community within God's self. And all community flows from this. God is Trinity, God is persons in relationship, and we are created in that same image and likeness. If you'd like to join me right now, just a simple breath prayer, please do. We're gonna use the beginning of St. Patrick's breastplate hymn. This isn't the practice I talked about that's coming at the very end, that's still in a few minutes, but just a mini practice, all right? So take a deep breath in, deep breath out, and as you inhale, I bind unto myself this day, and as you exhale, the strong name of the Trinity. So take a few deep breaths, repeat these lines silently within yourself. I bind unto myself this day, the strong name of the Trinity. This is a simple practice that calls to mind this living awareness of God, our Mother, Father, who is for us, God the Son, who is with us, and God the Spirit, who is in us. Almost there with the characteristics. Still with me? Resounding of affirmation. Number 8, love of learning through the arts. The Celts had a deep love of the scriptures as God's memory book of relationships and encounter. I love that description. Both the prayerful reading of Lectio Divina, a practice which many of us are familiar with, and studied research of the Bible were encouraged. They had a deep love of learning, but it was a yearning for wisdom more than knowledge. They looked to Jesus to teach them how to live. So in the monasteries, as we said, which were basically schools, the arts were celebrated. Music, story, calligraphy, jewelry were all windows onto heaven, and creative gifts were encouraged. They had poetic imagination, creative artistry. Anyone heard of the Book of Kells? Yeah, have a look at this image. So if you don't know about this, this is a 9th century manuscript that documented the 4 Gospels of the New Testament in Latin. The original is on permanent display in Dublin, Trinity College Library, I believe. But there, I just learned this literally this morning, there is a facsimile version on display at the UBC Library. Has anyone seen it? Aaron, have you seen it? Have you been there? Yeah, it's apparently there since 2019. And so, field trip, it would be great. Go check that out. So, Book of Kells. They also used dreams and imagery and symbols and storytelling to pass on what they'd learned about life in God. Finally, understanding of time. So, in marked contrast to our Western mentality of every second counts and always being on the go for the Celts, time was a sacred dimension and had to be used wisely and well. Their sense was that when God created time, God made plenty of it. That we all have the time we need to do anything we want to do. The problem isn't, I don't have the time, because we all have all the time there is. The problem is in what we truly value, which of course can be seen in the way we prioritize what we spend our time on. And Celtic Christians didn't only see time as chronological, one historical event following on from another, but from the perspective of the God who was and is to come, the eternally now God, whose name is I Am, Jesus the Christ, who is the same yesterday and today and forever. So we could put it this way, for the Celts, past, present, and future are all linked to God's now. So that's why Aidan, Bridget, Cuthbert, all the Celtic Christians through the ages are our spiritual contemporaries. Now, another prayer practice you might want to consider, just read Hebrews 11 and the first part of 12 sometime this week with that reality in mind. See the relay race, the passing of the baton as this ongoingness of the communion of the saints, the continuity of the church across space and time. All right. Time for the practice. So when I visited Iona, I stayed with the Iona community, which is an ecumenical Christian community that hosts week-long retreats. And as part of those retreats, you have the option to go on a walking pilgrimage around the island for either 3 miles or 7 miles. And I chose the 7 mile because I'm so hardcore. For this practice, I just want to show you several images of the places we saw, and for each one, we're going to pause. And as our guide, who is called Martin, did with us, I'm going to invite you to reflect briefly, to pray, to consider connections between these places and your own spiritual journey. Ready? Get as comfortable as you can in these plastic chairs or benches, and we'll just settle in. It'll take just a few minutes. First stop was the nunnery. When we stopped here, Martin spoke of the significance of women on Iona. Although now only a ruin, the legacy of what women contributed to the island remains. He talked about the nurturing aspects of God's character and how we are called to be like our mother and God in that way too. So I invite you now to reflect briefly on the women in your life who have shaped you spiritually. Give thanks for them. Invite the Spirit to make you like them. More empathetic, more nurturing, more supportive, more strong, more caring toward others. Next image was the war memorial. So here, we were invited to think about the significance of a small island community, how tight-knit they would become, and how not only seeing names on a memorial, but recognizing them would cause those who survived to think deeply about wars and why we fight them. I invite you now to silently pray and keep vigil for the many who are suffering in our world, even as you reflect on your own mortality, how war and conflict may have touched your own life. Brief silence. Next is the crossroads, and I apologize, I don't have the actual crossroads, but this was a picture I did take of our crew on pilgrimage. So there was a point at which those who wanted to do the shorter 3-mile pilgrimage went in a different direction, and those of us doing the longer one went opposite. So here, in a much broader sense, we reflected on our own times of decision, times when we are confronted with a challenge to either stay on the road we're on or to make a change. So I invite you now to consider the ways that you may be at a crossroads or an in-between space. As you reflect on your own reality, I invite you to seek to become aware of the companioning presence of the Trinity within your liminality. And remember, you're not alone. Next comes the marble quarry. So there was once a thriving marble industry on the island, but as time wore on, things became tougher. Familiar story, owners and supervisors apparently began to give their workers lower and lower wages until eventually things fell apart. So here we paused to think about justice, about treating people with equity and with fairness. So I invite you now to pray for God's justice, as the prophet Amos put it, to roll down like rivers into spaces where, toward people and groups for whom it is most deeply needed. Consider the ways Jesus may be asking you to embody the justice he came to bring. Be still. Okay, this next one is Columbus Bay. And I took that picture, 2008. This is where Columba apparently landed after the King of Scotland gifted him the island to build a monastery in 563 AD. And so Columba was a missionary monk who had come from Ireland, and he left it permanently at that time. So it was a time of leaving, of forsaking one place, and embracing a new direction. So as a symbol of this own action in our lives, we are invited to take two rocks from the shore. One to symbolize that which we wished to leave, and we were invited to just hurl that one into the sea as far as we could. And then the other to symbolize that which we desired to embrace as we moved on from there and to keep it. So this happened to be my last semester when we were there of teaching at Columbia Bible College. So this was a moment of leaving one place and moving into this church planting journey of getting artisan rolling. So it'll always stick with me. It's pretty pivotal. So for you, is there something you are being invited to leave behind? And is there something you are being invited to take up? Brief moment to consider that for yourself. Such huge questions in such short amounts of time. I invite you perhaps to hold these questions as we near the season of Lent, to follow Jesus in living in these cruciform ways, dying, rising, letting go, taking up in our daily patterns and practices. Two left. The hermit's cell. So some of the monks on Iona built a little stone dome as a place for retreat from time to time. It was a place that we took some time to be silent and reflect on our own need for regular times of stillness and inactivity. So, a brief moment for you to do the same. Where are you being invited to gently carve out some time to become quiet? Let's take a few seconds here. So we ended our journey at a place called St. Oran's Chapel, which is just next to the Iona Abbey. And this is a place of memorial for a certain family who lived during the time of the monks. Now, some of us have lost loved ones recently, or even not so recently, and we are experiencing deep grief. Within our varied losses, within the silence, and within God's eternal now, may we be held, and may we hold others. A brief stillness to honor the losses and griefs that we're sitting with. So I also reflected on a few themes related to pilgrimage, besides the ones in which we were guided. We're just going to close with these and move to the table together. So this is the interior of St. Oran's Chapel. You imagine yourself reflecting there after a pilgrimage. I reflected on the whole experience of Iona and how all of these people that were strangers at the beginning of the week had become, in my experience, my siblings in Christ. There was such a strong sense for me of being part of the whole body of Christ, all traveling together. I reflected on the fact that we need each other in our respective pilgrimages to help each other over difficult or messy parts along the path. We were specifically told to bring rain pants and gumboots to Iona, and these were instructions I ignored and later live to regret, never again. The rain falls sideways. The grassy hillsides get soggy, extremely marsh-like. My feet were completely drenched within mile one. We need each other to give instructions, to navigate the terrain appropriately, to keep one another company, to hear their stories, thereby learning to love and respect those who are different from us. We learned something of what it means to be patient with those who take a bit more time to get to the destination. Whether it's because they're older or more tired, carrying too much. You learn charity, you learn mercy, you learn forbearance when you're traveling with 70 people on the same multi-terrain path. Thanks be to God.